You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, and I'm James Whitmore coming to you from beautiful Wurundjeri country here in Naarm, Melbourne. And I acknowledge the custodians of Sea Country here in Victoria and around Australia. This week on Out of the Blue, we're taking a look at where the fish we eat comes from and what else gets caught up with it. That's the thorny issue of bycatch. I'll be right back after this.
Capitalism's inherent barbarism is on full display, from the genocide in Gaza and the rise of the far right, to growing militarism and the climate crisis.
We need to radically change the way society is organised.
Join us for the upcoming Eco-Socialism 2025 conference, Eco-Socialism, Not Barbarism, held on September 5th to the 7th at the Balam Balam Place in Brunswick.
We will be bringing together activists from across the Indo-Pacific, sharing experiences to resist capitalism's drive to barbarism and build the mass movements that we need.
Anyone who wants to be part of the discussion on how we can build a left-wing alternative is welcome to attend.
Featuring international guests from the United States, Pakistan, India, Malaysia, and Brazil, along with local campaigners.
Organised by Green Left and Socialist Alliance. Find out more by going to ecosocialism.org.au.
Green Left is a 3CR supporter.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio. If you've ever grabbed a tin of fish from the supermarket, it might have had a label on it that says dolphin friendly. It means that the fishers who caught the tuna use fishing methods that minimise the risk of catching marine life like dolphins. Worldwide, bycatch is one of the biggest problems facing marine ecosystems. You might have seen awful pictures or video of seabirds caught on hooks, on lines, or sharks entangled in nets. And it's not just those, hundreds of other species of all types and size are unintentionally caught as bycatch. So how can fishers get better at avoiding bycatch? Dr. Leslie Robertson is a research fellow at the University of Queensland. Her research is looking at bycatch in Australian fisheries. Leslie started by explaining what we mean when we say bycatch.
It's a tricky issue. Bycatch has come to mean a lot of things. So if you care about seabirds, you know, that could mean birds getting hooked on a line. That could mean birds hitting the warp line of a trawl. If you are a sea turtle person, that probably means a sea turtle getting caught in a net or on a hook. It has also come to mean sometimes like dolphins or pilot whales or even sharks that are stealing fish off of a hook or stealing bait. So broadly, it means anything that the fishers are not trying to catch. They're out there going for prawns or going for tuna or whatever they're going for, but they're catching or touching or interacting or being bothered with a lot of different species. And a lot of those other animals are endangered or protected or something that we're really trying to avoid.
And how great are the impacts on marine ecosystems? You've just mentioned some really, you know, charismatic species like dolphins and important species like sharks and things like that.
Bycatch can be huge. So it's hard to give kind of an average or a summary statistic just because it is really different for different places and seasons and types of fisheries. But, you know, there are certain trawl fisheries, for example, that can, you know, sometimes they're pulling up 90% of the catch goes back overboard. That's not an Australian number. That's like a different example I'm giving there. But that, you know, Australian fisheries, like most other fisheries in the world, are really struggling in some cases to reduce their bycatch and have solved a lot of or made huge progress on a lot of important species. So Australian prawn trawlers, for example, have done a great job at reducing sea turtle bycatch. But there are some trickier ones that are just seem to be a lot harder to avoid. And so we're kind of tackling those sticky problems now.
Yeah, before we get into what's happening in Australia, I just wonder if you could tell us, like, how big is the problem worldwide?
So it's big. Well, here's an example. The like a lot of, you know, the Marine Stewardship Council is like an eco label that a lot of people might recognize. And they've got a lot of, you know, requirements to get your fishery certified as sustainable. You need to meet various different things. Well, for sort of most fisheries that are trying to get that certification, that sustainability certification, bycatch is one of the problems that is holding them back or has been holding them back for a long time. So in terms of impacts on certain species, you know, we have species like the vaquita porpoise in Mexico that is about to go extinct because of bycatch. We've got, you know, the Western Pacific leatherback that is critically endangered, and bycatch in fisheries is probably the main threat. You know, so there's certain species where bycatch is the main thing that is causing problems for that species. And then also at an ecosystem level, you've got certain places where there's just a large amount of a lot of different types of things, corals, invertebrates, little mollusks and crabs, as well as little fish, as well as maybe some charismatic species, they're getting pulled up and dumped back. So it's a huge problem all over the world in a lot of different ways.
Yeah, it just makes me think of the incredible and quite horrifying footage in the recent David Attenborough Oceans documentary. I don't know if you've seen that, where they actually show the trawler net scraping across the bottom of the ocean.
Yeah, it is a huge problem. It's a problem not only for the ecosystems, but it's a problem for the fishers. Because, you know, that fishery might get shut down because of that bycatch issue. It might also just waste their time and money. You know, they would really like to just be catching prawns or catching hake or whatever they're going for.
How do people like you keep track of bycatch and measure its impacts?
That's a good question. So what we've been exploring is a different way of keeping track of it. So it's pretty tricky. You can just look at the amounts, you know, how many kilograms of prawns did they catch compared to kilograms of stuff that was tossed back over the side. But a lot of times we don't have that information. We don't have great data about what happens on board. Most of our information about fisheries comes from like the landings records. So when they get back to port and whatever they end up selling or offloading off the boat. But that in some cases, in a lot of cases, doesn't capture what happened at sea. It's also done in a very general way. So, you know, you might have someone in the office run a quick calculation of like the average number of tuna that the whole fleet got versus the average, you know, number of sharks or turtles or whatever else. But that misses a lot of the realities of fishing, that there's, you know, there's patterns happening at, without getting too much into the statistics, you know, there's patterns driven by seasons and years, and were these fishers operating out of a port in the south versus the north, you know. So it really you have to look at it a bit more rigorously than just an average across this fleet or across a year or across an ocean.
Yeah, so it's mostly self-reported by the vessels and the fishers on the boats. Are there ever cases where, you know, government or scientists are out there actually measuring the bycatch as well?
There are, and that is the data we've used in this research, because it's much better. You know, the fishers, in a lot of cases, the fishers aren't required to report their bycatch. And a lot of times they really can't, you know. You might have three guys or three people out on a boat, and they're hauling in a ton of prawns, and they're trying to do a million things at once, and they aren't able realistically to identify and record a bunch of little crabs and a bunch of little tiny stingrays and fish that all look the same, unless you're a trained scientific observer. So it is self-reported, and it's a case where it's really, really important to have some independent monitoring. So a camera system or a scientist or a trained observer, that their job is to deal with the monitoring, and the fisher's job is to do the fishing.
All right, let's talk about your new research. You looked at 5 fisheries in Australia. Can you tell us a bit about those fisheries?
Yeah, these are Commonwealth fisheries. So Australia has state fisheries and then Commonwealth fisheries, which is a bit confusing because sometimes they're operating in the same area. But we looked at the northern prawn fishery, which is up in the Gulf of Carpentaria and the Joseph Bonaparte Gulf, and then the tuna longline fishery off the east coast, tuna and billfish fishery, and then 3 fisheries that operate in a huge area kind of off the south and east of Australia that are lumped under this sort of very annoying acronym, but it's a bunch of different types of gears and species they're targeting down there.
Yeah, I'm wondering if you could just explain what a fishery actually means in Australia, because it kind of is a little bit of an abstract concept at times.
It means whatever you want it to mean. It usually means a group of boats that are using a sort of similar method in a defined area. And they're going for a list of the same species, but it really becomes a management term. And it kind of means who has licenses to catch certain things with certain gears in an area, but that can be a huge area. It can be the entire east coast of Australia. It can cover a lot of different species, and you actually have fishers who are, they might all be using something called a trawl, but they might be doing a lot of different things with their individual nets that actually make them fairly different.
Yeah, it's interesting that it's kind of area-based. Does it have anything to do with the actual populations of the species that are being caught?
Yes, it does. So you can have a fishery that's operating in the Pacific Ocean, going all over, but they're supposed to be fishing, the eastern stock of yellowfin tuna. But then you need to figure out what that stock or population, what the boundaries are, which can be a whole team of scientists and data collection on its own.
Well, can you tell us a bit about what you found from this study and what you're looking at?
So we asked a really obvious question, which is, does it matter what individuals in this fishery are doing? Which sounds really obvious, but it's actually not the way that most management measures look at the issue of bycatch. So a lot of things we do to manage fisheries are done just across that whole fishery or fishing fleet. So you might say, all right, the northern prawn fishery, you guys all have to use this turtle excluder device, this little grid that you put in your net. Or, all right, we found a high bycatch area. No one is allowed to fish in the eastern part of the Gulf in the spring or whatever it is. That's fine. And those measures can work and they can kind of be easier to enforce. But we just asked the question of, is that overlooking important things that individuals are doing? So that's the whole question behind this research. And we found, yes, that actually, in addition to things we know matter, like what time of day you fish or the location or the season, those are known risk factors for catching more turtles or catching more seabirds. And we looked at how the individuals sort of stack up against those other risk factors. And we found that it's really, really important. And it's actually really important for things we think wouldn't matter. So you mentioned the David Attenborough film, pretty damning towards bottom trawling. And we wanted to know, are there good bottom trawlers? Are there some crews out there that are doing this much better than others? And this is just a preliminary study with kind of limited data sets, but we found evidence that yes, even for things you think are pretty hard to fish well with, by fish well, I mean like fish selectively and not get a bunch of bycatch, we found evidence that there are some crews that seem to be doing significantly better than others, which is really exciting.
That's Dr. Leslie Robertson from the University of Queensland talking about bycatch. And I really enjoyed how Leslie explained some of the complexities of Australia's fishing industry there. We'll chat more to Leslie after this.
Get lost in science.
Tune in to 3CR every week to hear
Beth,
Chris
and Stuart
discuss news and issues from the universe that is science.
Get informed and learn a bit more about the world around you. Lost in Science can be heard every Thursday at 8:30 in the morning and is repeated the following Tuesday at 6 a.m.
Word to the nerd. You can also download a podcast. Go to the website at www.3cr.org.au and get lost in science.
You're listening to Out of the Blue on 3CR Community Radio, and I'm talking with Dr. Leslie Robertson from the University of Queensland about how fishes can prevent bycatch.
What sort of species were being caught in the bycatch of the fisheries that you were studying?
There's a lot of bycatch, I mean, hundreds of species. We looked at some select examples that are like conservation concerns. So things like mako sharks, hammerhead sharks, school shark, seahorses and pipefish, sea turtles, dolphins, sea lions. So we looked at sort of charismatic species or very threatened species like seahorses.
You've mentioned, it's really down to the individual behavior, which is so fascinating and also, you know, kind of hopeful, really. For the boats that were minimizing bycatch, you've mentioned some of the risk factors, but do we know what they were doing that meant that they were catching far less bycatch?
You just mentioned the thing I'm going to probably spend the next 5 years of my career looking at. No, we don't. The reason we don't is because fisheries data is so confidential. We had to sign a lot of data agreements and confidentiality agreements. We weren't allowed to show this and that. And we also weren't allowed to know which boats, anything about the individual boats, not their vessel ID or who was on board. So we don't know what they're doing. And that's the next big thing to look at is once you understand kind of the range of performance in a fleet, then you know, you as the scientist, or probably more likely the manager, the fisheries manager, should follow up and really figure out, okay, what are the secrets? What are the good secrets that these successful fishers are using?
So, yeah, this is probably a bit more like a down the track once we actually understand like what these fishers are doing. But will regulations and laws need to change to encourage fishing vessels to reduce their bycatch?
So right now, a big problem is that the fishers who care, who are successful, they often get penalized by the sort of dead weight in the fleet. And I think everyone has experienced that, you know, if you're on a sports team and, you know, you're the goalie and you're really good, but you have no defense. And so you keep losing games because there's just these other people on your team who are dragging you down. So that's a big problem. And that has happened a lot with bycatch. So, you know, in the past, it was kind of the case. It's been the case with school sharks a bit and with seabirds in the past. The whole fleet got penalized. You know, if the whole fleet caught 5 birds or whatever it was in a year, then the whole fishery got shut down. This has happened all over the world. It happened recently in Alaska with a massive, very valuable fishery, the Alaskan pollock fishery. One boat caught some Chinook salmon and that went over the limit and the whole fishery got shut down for the season, which, you know, I don't know how many millions of dollars that cost that industry in that town. So what needs to be done, I think, is designing some individual measures that reward the good fishers, the high performing individuals for their success. So say they don't catch any seabirds all season, maybe they get either some additional quota for tuna or whatever they're fishing. Maybe they get a little kind of insurance boost where if they do catch a seabird the next year, they get like a little free pass. And then maybe you really need to penalize the individual. If you have a boat that is catching 50% of the whole fleet's seabirds or sea turtles or whatever it is, instead of coming down on the whole fleet, there should be a measure that comes down on those individuals. It's just trickier because you need to have good data about what happens on individual boats in order to do that.
When we're emailing, you mentioned that attitudes have really changed to bycatch in fisheries. Can you tell us a bit about what you've seen over the time that you've been working on this issue?
I have met some fishers who really do care, and they're scientists. You know, they're better scientists than I am. They're out there, you know, making these adjustments to their net. Oh, what if they just tied this knot so that the caught end was at a different angle, and they're kind of testing it themselves, trying to reduce bycatch and trying to make more money, which they should be, trying to improve their efficiency and all that. So there's definitely individuals out there experimenting, and they don't want to kill dolphins, you know, they don't want to kill sea turtles. They've got kids who love dolphins, so they don't want to be the bad guy. And I think that has changed a lot. There's also more pressure, you know, fisheries in Australia they're feeling the squeeze for sure. You've got environmental things like this big algal bloom off of South Australia is a huge disaster for the fishing industry down there. You've got climate change, like making fish move to different places and be harder to predict and or not grow as big, or you've got all sorts of things happening. You've got competition with oil, with offshore wind, with marine protected areas. So fishers really need to get, it's not as easy, it was never easy, it's always been hard work, but to be profitable and to be successful now and be legal with all of the kind of new constraints and regulations, you really have to be good. And I have seen some fishers who are just reluctant to change. And I understand that, you know, once you learn how to do something and you've been doing it one way for 30 years, how annoying to have to, you know, use a new net or something. So I do understand that. But we've seen those fishers that are very reluctant to change. But I've also met a lot personally who they're willing, you know, they don't want this industry to die. If the fishing industry in Australia dies, where are we going to get our seafood from? Probably imported from Thailand or Vietnam. And is that better? You know, that has sustainability implications. So there are fishers out there that like they want this industry to continue, and they want those fish to exist into the future and to be profitable to catch. So I've seen a lot of them coming to the table.
You just mentioned like the consumption of fish. And I'm just wondering, as a result of all this, is there anything that fish eaters can do when we're at the shops or at the supermarkets?
Definitely. You know, you have people, they see a video, they saw Seaspiracy, they saw that the bycatch is a problem, and they, you know, they hate that, and they're, you know, they're now against bottom trawlers. Fine, but like, do they still go out and purchase prawns that were caught with a bottom trawler? So the consumers, you know, we have a big role to play too. The change has to happen at all levels of the system. It needs to be a management thing. You know, the fishers need to come to the table as well, but you also need consumers saying, hey, I care about this. Hello, Woolies, or whatever restaurant I'm going to, I want to eat sustainable seafood, and I will pay the price that it costs to catch seafood sustainably. So should canned tuna be as cheap as it is? You know, what is that? Why is it so cheap? But also, how can we at all levels of the system make seafood available and affordable, but still sustainable? And one part of that is asking where your seafood comes from and how it was caught, and like making an effort, because that will show the fishing industry and the, you know, the seafood distributors that their consumers, they do actually want good, sustainable seafood.
Leslie, thank you so much for joining us on Out of the Blue.
Thanks so much for having me.
That was Dr. Leslie Robertson, research fellow from the University of Queensland, talking about her new research that's showing how fishers can reduce the bycatch of other species. You can find today's episode and all our previous episodes on 3cr.org.au/radioblue, and you can also follow our Facebook page for updates. That's all for this week. We'll be with you again next Sunday.